This is Radio Kate reporting from the World Conference of Science Journalists 2011. We're here in the searing heat of Qatar, but freezing inside the Qatar Foundation building where the conference is being held. And I've managed to catch up with Eugenie Scott, who was on a panel last night about evolution and journalism. It's actually a very fascinating panel, which is why I've tracked you down to speak to you. I just want to give a bit of background about where you're from and the sort of work that you do.
I'm the executive director of the National Center for Science Education. This is a membership group. We're out of Oakland, California in the U.S. And we work at the grassroots level to try to protect the teaching of evolution in the American public schools, but also keep religious views, the various forms of creationism, out of science class.
And you say you're trying to protect it from threat, but I mean, is it really a threat? I was actually quite shocked by one of the things you said yesterday, that there had been 11 acts or bills tried to be passed to try and put evolution or creationism into the classroom, and that was just this year. So, I mean, is it something that, from the UK, I see it as one of those American things, but it sounds like it really is a threat.
No, it is. It's a constant. Think of it as background radiation, okay? Periodically you get a supernova, you get a big event like the Dover Intelligent Design Trial or some other piece of legislation, and there'll be a court scene or something. But basically there's this background radiation of anti-evolutionism that's been the case in the United States for 50 years or so. And it takes various forms. One form is sort of a straight-up anti-evolutionism, where you're trying to get evolution out of the classroom, or you're trying to denigrate it in some fashion. I was talking yesterday about these new bills that have come up that are from that particular approach, where teachers are encouraged to teach the weaknesses of evolution. That's a curious phrase to a scientist. And the other manifestation of this struggle over the years is trying to get some form of religion, creationism, intelligent design, creation science, some form of religion into the science class. The former problem is much more prevalent now because the courts have spoken very clearly. Any form of creationism is illegal to teach in American public schools because of our constitutional separation of church and state, which not every country has, of course. So it's, you know, the situation is different.
I mean, that sounds like a good thing.
Well, we think so. It's part of our political tradition. I mean, when the founding fathers came over here when they set up the country in the 18th century, they knew from the experience of Europe what a mess you can get into when you combine religion and governance. So they set up a variety of checks and balances, and the First Amendment of the Constitution in the Bill of Rights says very clearly that the state keeps its hands off religion and religion keeps its hands off the state. So we do have an independence of both religion and politics and governance. And
so that should be the end of it, shouldn't it?
Well, you know, as one of our Supreme Court justices back in the 1800s once said, or as a politician said about a Supreme Court distance, Mr. Marshall has made his decision, now let's see him enforce it. Because the law is clear doesn't necessarily mean the law is always followed. And so that's why we exist. The National Center for Science Education monitors this situation. And where we find that a situation of this kind of unconstitutional behavior has shown up, then we provide, we offer help to people in the community, and they're always very happy to accept it. Because we've dealt with this situation for almost 25 years. We're very knowledgeable about how the delicate way you handle these local controversies, and every single one of them has its idiosyncrasies, certainly. But you have to know why creationism isn't science, why evolution is science, so certainly the science and philosophy of science elements are prevalent. But you also need to know about local politics, and you also need to know how to write a good letter to the editor. I mean, there's, you know, how do you make a persuasive presentation to the local school board and to accomplish your goals? So we have this kind of joke in-house, and now I'm revealing it to the public. It's half science, half social work is what we do.
And it was interesting, the question of balance that came up on the panel, and kind of, you know, this quite often in journalism, I know that you were kind of taught, well, you must have a balanced story, but there were some very interesting comments on that. You'll explain better than I.
Yeah, no, balance is an extremely important journalistic tradition. I don't think readers want to have a totally one-sided, I mean, heck, that's what we have Fox News. I mean, sorry about that. And, you know, balance is important. Nobody's arguing about that. But science reporting is a little different. I mean, where balance comes in is when you're dealing with opinions. When you're dealing with empirical fact, balance is silly. My elevator speech version of that, my soundbite version is, it's not a matter of opinion whether the Earth goes around the sun or the sun goes around the Earth. You don't need balance when you're talking about heliocentrism and standard astronomy. Well, similarly, if you're talking about whether living things descended with modification from common ancestors, which is the big idea of evolution, scientists aren't debating that. This is not a matter of opinion. This is not a matter... Well, some scientists say this didn't happen. Okay, there's a tiny percentage of scientists who deny that evolution took place, but I can show you astronomers who think that the planets go around the Earth, okay? So the fact that you've got some outrider scientist doesn't mean that there's not a strong consensus on a scientific explanation. And that's, of course, this whole controversy, which I think it's useful to point out to people, the whole creation and evolution controversy in the U.S. or Canada or wherever is really about what do you teach in school. It's not about should students know something about creationism. Well, yeah, sure. But it's what do you teach in a science class. Big idea here, you should teach science.
There was something you mentioned about the printing of textbooks and the ability of big states like Texas, who order a lot of textbooks. It's confused me. To potentially skew what ends up in textbooks around the world. Can you go into that in a bit more detail?
Yes, the publishing industry is, of course, a very large industry, and they're very, very dependent upon what people buy. In the United States, what school districts have to buy in the way of textbooks is a textbook that meets the standards of the state. The state determines what content needs to be taught. So the textbook writers write for the state standards. And the state of Texas has an unusual amount of influence in this regard because it's such a huge state. There's so many students that Texas buys a lot of books, so the textbook publishers pay a lot of attention to what Texas wants. So when the state of Texas, as it did unfortunately a couple of years ago, when the standards are revised in the state of Texas and the standards include questionable claims about evolution, that is bad for all of us. Now, the good news is that because of the efforts of our allies in Texas and the people that we work with there, they did marvelous work. They made the standards a lot less bad than they would have been had not the Texas Citizens for Science, Texas Freedom Network, NCSE worked together to persuade the more moderate school board members to vote against the really worst stuff. But there's still enough bad statements in the Texas standards that we don't like them very much. So the textbook publishers are going to need to meet those standards in some way. Now, the standards are general enough so that what we're trying to encourage the textbook publishers to do is to meet these new requirements with good science as opposed to using them as an excuse to slip in anti-evolution materials or weaknesses of evolution or some sort of weasel wording that would imply to a student, well, you know, evolution's not that strong a science, which would really be miseducation of students.
It's interesting you touched there upon the importance of language and how you frame these things. You want us to give up on the idea of a theory of evolution.
Well, the problem is theory of evolution is a perfectly appropriate phrase in the context of science. But I'm an ex-college professor, and I know very well from having taught for 15 years or so that what they hear is more important than what you say. And when you say theory, people don't necessarily think of it in terms of science. They don't necessarily think, oh, inferential explanation, based upon logic and laws and tested observation. That's not what they think. When most people hear the word theory, they think unreliable. They think guess or a hunch, something you don't have to pay much attention to. Now, of course, gravitation is a theory. Heliocentrism is a theory. Evolution is a theory. All of these are inferential explanations. Science is chock full of inferential explanations. That's what we do. We come up with inferential explanations. That's the big deal in science. But it tends to be the case that scientists use the word theory of very seldom. But because we're all members of society and we sort of reflect, you know, the language that we are familiar with, the phrase theory of tends to be applied to evolution almost to the exclusion of everything else. So the public hears theory of evolution, they think, oh, that's the tentative explanation, you know, that's weak science, as opposed to something like gravity, right?
I mean, I've been caught up on that myself. Somebody said to me, well, tell me this then. Why is it just a theory of evolution? Well, I could go into the philosophical and semantic meanings of the word, but no. Let's just say it's the one with the most evidence and is widely accepted and is, yeah, like gravity, as you say.
That's exactly why you should not use the phrase theory of evolution, unless you want to spend 5 minutes explaining philosophy of science. Most of the time, that's not what you're talking about. So, you know, there's such a thing as a teachable moment, but especially for a journalist who's writing an article or doing a blog post or doing an interview, radio, TV or something, you don't have time. You're limited with what you can talk about. So theory of doesn't add anything to your explanation of this science. Just call it evolutionary biology or evolution or geological evolution or whatever, you know, astronomy, whatever, cosmology. Leave out the phrase theory of.
Because you had some other words on the blacklist, too.
Yeah, and this is going to be one for you, my dear, judging from your accent. Darwinism. Darwinian. Darwinist. These are all terms that tend to be used interchangeably for evolutionary biology. But they're actually very misleading on a number of levels. Now, I know Darwin was your guy, and I've read a lot about him, and I have huge admiration, and you know, few are second to my appreciation and admiration for the old boy. But what Darwin knew about evolution back in the 1900s can't hold a candle to what we know today. So nobody is a Darwinist in the sense of using that word to reflect what we know about evolution. And there's an additional problem in the United States, and unfortunately growing so in other countries where anti-evolutionists have been active. And that is that the creationists in the U.S. have been using the term Darwinist as an epithet. Darwinism is an ism. It's an ideology. It's an atheistic ideology. And, you know, isms are bad. Communism and racism and sexism and all these isms are bad things. We don't want our children being taught ideology in school. So we don't want them taught Darwinism, now do we? So Darwinism, kind of like theory of, doesn't add anything to your discussion of evolution. And because what they hear is more important than what you say, just leave it out. If you want to talk about evolutionary biology, evolution by natural selection, talk about evolutionary biology. Darwinism just throws people off. It's not an ideology, number one. It's a science. And number two, why do we refer to this science, this 21st century science, by its 19th century ancestor? I don't see physicists calling themselves Kelvinists.
That's true. I'm just trying to think of any other example. Pythagoras, maybe, is the only one I can think of, but not...
You find me the mathematician that calls himself a Pythagorean. It would be a stretch. And geologists don't call themselves Lyellists, right? So, you know, why are we Darwinists? This doesn't make sense.
Those are very good points. And if we want to find out a bit more about the work that you're doing, where can we find you online?
You can find us at ncse.com, National Center for Science Education. Our website is full of fun stuff. And I suspect there's a lot of young people who listen to your podcast. And if they ever have to do a term paper on an interesting subject, they should come to our site because they could get a lot of background material on this controversy.
It sounds like it. Very fascinating. Thank you ever so much.